Well, welcome to After Hours, the shortest After Hours in history, but it's actually not going to be that short. We're live now for about the next 10 minutes. Then after we get the news at the top of the hour, my two guests and I are going to talk for a while. Afterward, I'm going to post it online. But I want you to go out and buy. It's not a joyful thing. It's not exactly the great Christmas gift for your mom. But it is called Mother Chicago, Truant Dreams and Specters Over the Gilded Age. It is one of the most revelatory, provocative, frightening, scary books I've ever read about Chicago. My father, who was an eminent Chicago historian, would be absolutely proud of this book and its author, Martin Billheimer. Martin, is that enough praise for you right now?
Yeah, it certainly is, especially mentioning your father. It's high praise indeed, and from you too, of course.
You take the measure of, in essence, of three places that once existed in this town and existed ostensibly to help the young people, the wild children of this city, and in fact did not help. What drew you? What was the catalyst for you saying at one point, I want to look at this? Because I know you're really well read and you're a very eclectic fellow, but what was it that drew you to this story?
I think seeing the remnants of the parental home as a kid, which was on Foster Avenue. Some of your listeners might remember, tucked away what's now Northeastern University on the grounds. Seeing it, definitely, because it's a very gothic building, very like a Dark Shadows or Charles Dickens or something like
sure,
that.
Yeah. Sure,
stuck on next to, you know, a fairly busy thoroughfare, and I wondered what it was. You didn't forget it. It had tattered red curtains hanging out the window like tongues, you know, and it was a very, very, very gothic building. This is a very exemplar of that. The image of that, and like all of us, just our cities are full of institutions, most of them penal ones.
And penal ones and institutions that have vanished, too.
Yeah, exactly.
But the places you write about, Brennell School, this tuberculosis place, Dunning, have rested in not just, there. Even I remember, and I know you listeners out there will remember the word Dunning. It is how your parents would try to terrify you when you did something bad. So there is, in contemporary Chicago, not only the echo of these places in what is happening in contemporary Chicago, but those kind of bizarre notions and histories. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. It's entered into the language through proper names, through streets. Dunning, Audie Home.
Sure.
Which I actually thought was named after Audie Murphy. It's not. But
Audie Murphy, that's so funny because I just read a book by Lillian Ross about the making of Red Badge of Courage, which starred Audie Murphy. It all comes around. But back to even though you saw those buildings and you know they sort of sat in your mind, when did you start to dig into this? Because the stories, ladies and gentlemen, are gruesome, ghastly, but to my mind,
extremely.
What Martin has done here is provide an essential thread to the fabric of the city of Chicago and its history.
Yeah, before the internet, it was very hard to find anything. You'd ask around, and especially that place was quite strange too, because you'd only spend about 3 months in it, and then you were supposedly shipped on to other places. So unlike the other two places, it was kind of a purgatory or a medium area. The tuberculosis place had longer stays, and Dunning sometimes had lifetime stays or death times.
Well, as you write here, and I must tell you, ladies and gentlemen, Martin Billheimer, who I have known for some time, I knew him first as a talented bongo player, but he's always been, I mean, very smart. Whenever we had a conversation, he's very smart. One of the great revelations of this book, Mother Chicago, which you should buy, is what a stylish, wonderful writer he is. He just writes this. This is not among the most stylish things, but it's a lovely short paragraph. Dunning was the asylum and the poorhouse. Dunning is a part of town. Dunning was a threat, still remembered. Dunning was a name. Dunning is nearly 6 miles west of the vanished parental and what remains of the old sanitarium. Dunning stays its place. You're so right about this, and I think that, it is in the minds of a lot of Chicagoans. And you will hear this as you go out promoting the book and talking about the book. You will really hear a lot about this.
It's funny. I already have.
Yeah.
Somebody just came up to me and said, you know, my mother was the first person ever to give birth in the TB sanitarium on South Side, you know.
Interesting claim to fame. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. So you get little bits of recognition like that, and also you start to remember things that maybe you heard when you were younger, or you know.
Well, that's the nature, as you well know. That's the nature of history.
And yeah, it's very uncertain. Yeah.
And I think that what you've done here with your research, and this is in-depth research. I mean, did you not at one point say to yourself, Jesus, I can't take this anymore?
Yeah, absolutely, because I started not to trust the research started to accumulate. I don't really know what I'm doing, which is good.
Yeah, I agree.
One should never really know too much about what you're doing. So I sort of invented it, and it piled up, and I started to sort of mistrust it. In other words, researching also makes you very paranoid, much like walking around cities can do as well, and that was something I hadn't really expected. I thought it would just be a chore, but then it became, you know, ghostly or something, I think.
Well, and the other thing you often cite in here, and it's almost embarrassing to be an employee of the Tribune still. Cite some Tribune stories from through the years that are chilling on their own, just the way
really
in which
are.
They reported
some
of the troubles afflicting these various places. How long, Martin Billheimer, did you research this book?
About 3 or 4 years, I'd say.
With the notion, Martin, of putting it together in a book, or you know, you're also the kind of guy who would do this kind of research just for yourself.
I think a lot of us do that kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, we always have, especially in big cities. There are obsessions that you get. So, you know, even, I don't know, whether it's Bigfoot or whether it's institutions, you devolve into it. But, no, I did actually think of that it would be a book, because I was approached by Ms. Ward about possibly submitting a manuscript, which I did.
Ms. Ward, who is sitting in here and who you will hear from shortly.
Yeah. So we were trying to come up with ideas for books and institutions, and especially something to do with the city, which is where I'm from. I'm from uptown, so.
We will continue this conversation in a while. We're going to do it here right now. You just heard the shortest after-hours show in history, thanks to Brett Jackson in there. And we'll carry on afterward, and it'll be yours to hear. And this book is Mother Chicago, Truant Dreams and the Specters Over the Gilded Age. It's published by Farrell House, and the author is Martin Billheimer. Well, we are back. I am talking still. We did have this live on Sunday night. It was 10 minutes of fantastic radio, talking with Martin Billheimer, the author of Mother Chicago, Truant Dreams and Specters Over the Gilded Age, which is I am literally calling this an essential Chicago history book, and I don't use that phrase very often because many Chicago history books these days are like, oh, secret Chicago, here's where they get the best, smallest pizza on the north side. This is not that, but it does inform in a rather chilling way the history of this city. Christina Ward is not the publisher of Farrell House books, but you were the editor of this book. What's your formal title?
Formally, I'm the vice president of Farrell House. I know.
That's pretty good. Farrell House. Look up Farrell. Is it farrellhouse.org?
.com.
Look it up. They have a lot of amazing books. One about a famous kind of saloon keeper that I wrote about some time ago. You made Martin write this book? Yes?
This is a book that, like, and Martin is not alone, as many authors are nagged into writing their books. They have great ideas and are fantastic writers, and that's the case with Martin. But the act of writing a book is extraordinarily difficult. It really is.
No question.
And the editor's job is to advocate for both the writer and for the reader, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that the ideas that the writer wants to present are in a way that they want to present them, as well as serve the reader, that makes sure that it's you're getting something out of it as a reader. And so that's what my job is.
You write in here, Martin, near the end of it, near the end of this remarkable book, "Now is the appropriate time to pay tribute to rumors, gossip, and tall tales. For in every case, every story," and we were talking about this just before, "every story heard on the street proved to be more than true. That is, the conspiracies of Dunning, the leaving home to learn fear of the parental, the sanitarium Snow Whites. Every shaking on the vine leads to suspicions whose ornate language concealed a singular fact waiting to be uncovered in the record where it was hardly hidden. It takes little or no energy. The information comes to you quickly without any bother." Not that quickly. You have to dig. I mean, one of the things that is remarkable about this book is the depth of the research. It's not just culling old newspaper stories. I mean, it is. Did that surprise you, Christina? You've known Martin for a while.
I've known Martin, so it didn't surprise me that he was able to find this remarkable source material and then take it and weave it together in a way that tells that larger story of Chicago, and then, of course, of all big cities.
Yeah.
Because what Chicago did with its institutions was then replicated throughout the country.
You know, Martin, these institutions, it's hard to laud them, but they were sort of founded as a means to, by some wealthy people, so by some politicians, to benefit the wild children or damaged children of the city, or lost children of the city.
Well, they came into being, and probably of necessity at that time. There's an obsession in cities with their inhabitants, especially with their children. It's almost as if the city grew of its own accord and it didn't know what to do with the people in it. So it has almost sentient, to use a horror story trope.
Well, there's some notion in Chicago history, especially in light of the 150th anniversary of the fire, that, wow, okay, it's a horrible place, it was muddy, it was terrible, the fire came, and then it became the architectural marvel of the age, which, in a sense, buried stories like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's inevitable. The next time there's a Chicago fire, we'll probably be treated to a different version of that story, and so on and over again. Almost like a remake. You know, once you see it in one situation, you see it in another. And like Christina said, all cities, in some ways, in fact, in most ways, are exactly the same.
One of the other things that distinguishes this book, Christina, and just Christina Ward, and you're knowing Martin and knowing that he's smart and knowing that he's well-read, you must have been on some level a little overwhelmed with the stylishness of his writing.
I'm a fan of the same time period that Martin is.
Yeah.
And so I was able to understand some of the references from a totally, you know, the mechanics of making a book. We did have some arguments with our copy editor because our copy editor, following, you know, AP style, and this book does not follow AP style.
Exactly.
And with intent and with purpose.
Well, I also think I'm going to read a couple sentences here just to show you, and these are all chosen almost at random. Here's one that grabbed me for keeps. Is "the alley is the sister of the open street, and she is devoted to shame and sign language." That, Martin and Christina is a great sentence. Then here's another observation of sort of contemporary Chicago. He's talking about little photo studios that used to dot the city, and he writes, these little studios are dying away because technology favors the amateur over the specialist, home over the workshop, which ensures that everyone is both an expert and a fraud. That's extraordinarily good writing, and it so mirrors the way I think of modern photography too these days.
Or experts in general, they're frauds.
No, of
course. Who would want to be an expert then?
Exactly. This is not, and I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this is not an easy read. This is not like reading one of those books that says, oh, here are the 10 best pizzas and the 10 best donuts in Chicago, and here are the 10 greatest things. It's not like exactly taking a Wendella boat cruise. It demands, as all great books do, it demands something from you, the reader. Do you agree with that assessment, both of you?
I do. I think that readers are rewarded when they're challenged. It's a much more satisfying exercise in reading when you've got a challenge. If it's easy, then it's just, you might as well watch TV.
Yeah, no, it's true, too. And I mean, it's probably due to the fact that there's plenty of biographies of authors, but there aren't any biographies of readers, as far as I know. Which is an injustice, you know, because what is the reader like? Well, yeah,
that's a good point.
One doesn't know. Do one, to quote Fats Waller.
The other thing that is woven through this, but well, let's talk about each one of these places, if you could.
Sure.
Dunning, we've kind of touched on. The others. Dunning is the one that rests in my mind most securely because I heard about it when I was a kid and I was threatened with being sent to Dunning and I didn't know what it was, but it sure sounded scary.
Yeah. It's you're not alone in not knowing what it was because nobody did. It was a plurality of places. It was poorhouse, mental asylum. These days, the remnants of Reed are still there. It's out in Irving Park. Some of the listeners might know that. It never knew what it was because it was so many different places, and all of them were places used to dump people. And then in the mid-'80s, the city was laying pipe for what would be the mall there, and they started to unearth bodies.
Yeah.
And they found there was something like, oh, I think 40,000 bodies from the cemetery that are still under there. So Dunning is a netherworld. An ossuary, yeah.
One of the parts about Dunning here is the Committee on Dunning Institutions offers a $500 reward for information on the body snatching. Body snatching.
Yeah, it's very grand.
Dunning night watchman Henry Ulrich is indicted for stealing 4 bodies and selling them to one Dr. William Smith. Gruesome as gruesome can get.
Corpses are worth money these days. Only real estate is.
But I think that even though this is a story, Mother Chicago is about a Chicago of over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
But yet there is news stories about a man who willed his body to science and ended up being autopsied for a paying audience. We are never so far from these horrors of our past. The past is the present. And I think that's what is so compelling about Martin's book, just from someone who's read it many times, is the connection between what has happened, how we think about poor people, how we think about sick people.
Mm-hmm.
Not much has changed in our society.
Some of it has changed simply in the institutions. It's now county jail.
Yeah, they've changed their form and they have disguised their practices, but they have
not stopped their practices.
No, it's probably wider now than it was. And I think also with the Gilded Age, the present age seems very close due to neoliberal politics in the sense of free market fundamentalist politics, let's say, monetarist politics, or whatever you want to call it. So that's very much favors the wealthy land baron or tech baron these days.
Well, which we have of which we have many.
Yeah, and phantom liquidity.
Here's another example. I'm just flitting through the book and things I underlined. Down there in the 1880s, Chicago's lakefront shanties and burgeoning ghettos were awash with numerous plagues. Waves, and this is something ignored in most of the upbeat histories of Chicago, waves of typhus, smallpox, malaria from the mosquito-infested water roiling with garbage, cholera and dysentery were the major killers in town. I would dare say that many people who consider themselves great Chicago historians don't know that.
I'm sure they don't, or they don't want to talk about it. I think it's more, everything is known. It's just people omit to say.
Well, the other thing, both of you might agree, and Martin, you certainly, having read as much as you have about Chicago, and you're a child of Chicago, of the uptown neighborhood, this town has ever been, I'm saying ever been, a boosterish town. Very few people in this town, whether they are politicians or historians, want to or care to look at the dark side.
Yeah,
I think that's a failing.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is. Or when they do look at it, it becomes commandeered and changed into, say, Al Capone kitsch or serial killer kitsch. I think that's national, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. You know, it becomes cute or something. I suppose one day the 1919 race riots will somehow be transformed.
Well, which is another fascinating aspect of this book, in the way in which you take the full measure of the 1919 riots. And they were just, you know, a couple of years ago, there were stories about them, and it was like, oh, something bad happened.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
Oh, something bad happened at the beach.
Yeah, yeah.
A bunch of people got in, like...
Bummer, right?
What made it seem like some kind of schoolyard confrontation, and it is not... Go into that, if you would, for a while.
Yeah,
it's really horrifying.
It's true. They did make it come off like a minor schoolyard confrontation, maybe comparable to, like, some low-level King's Royals Rumble from 1975 or something like that.
You know? Uh-huh.
But it's not at all... After the initial murder, which it was, the kid swimming in the wrong side of the beach.
Right.
White side of the beach was stoned, you know. Then after the initial skirmishes started all around the city. Now, in order to contain those, there were deputized forces, street gangs, whatever, basically deputized by the police, the most famous of which was Mayor Daley's gang. He was there.
Yeah.
Man, Richard. And the National Guard got called in, as they did recently. The city became even more militarized and sectioned off, even though it was itself founded on military lines due to the conquest, the Indian conquest, the genocide earlier. Those lines of demarcation still exist. For example, Roosevelt Street, which is where the National Guard were stationed by the political forces here in order to contain the riots.
Yep.
The South Side, the Black Belt, is actually more like a series of cantons. It wasn't an entire black neighborhood. It was actually interweaved.
You have another
in and out.
Yeah.
So, but it was completely arranged so that black areas would be surrounded by white ones, much like on a chessboard, or rather in the game of Go, the great Chinese game, where you surround one area with another area, black and white, to make sure that the one area cannot move or cannot expand. These became things like restricted covenants, which were created by the University of Chicago.
Sure.
By their lawyers and by their intellectuals.
Go ahead, keep talking. I have it written in here.
I think what, for me, what was fascinating in reading about the goings on of 1919 is how Martin interwove the layout of the city itself.
Oh, yeah.
And how the city becomes an active player in the riots.
Yeah.
Well, you right the here, intention, you're right yeah. here, Martin, in, exactly. in the in second section of In the Summer 1919. 1919 affirms boundaries while custom cements them double-barreled. A lone house in a pale neighborhood can be its own black belt, or three houses, a street of houses. This is one of the most chilling sentences I've ever read, portion of a sentence. A woman or a man standing or walking, which is more dangerous. And that is, sadly, Chicago.
Yeah, right, right. Those boundaries and those lines and those experiments will be reproduced on every level, architecturally, physically, well, in one person or in 100.
They were certainly reproduced in the era of public housing.
Yeah.
In a really stark and, I think, dangerous way. You know, I think what I'm getting at here, ladies and gentlemen, is that this book echoes right up until yesterday in a number of different ways. Did you realize that writing it, and did you realize it, Christina Ward, editing this book?
From an editorial point of view, as soon as I read the first draft of the manuscript, I saw the correlation to today.
Yeah.
I saw it right away. I'm not sure, Martin, when you were writing it, did you see it when you were writing it, or was it just whole cloth as you were putting
it
together?
Well, I saw it in the same way that that one sees something when you walk down the street, so in the sense that the houses may be from different epochs, but you're the person walking down the street in the present day. So, yes, if that answers it.
How difficult was it? I mean, I know that you marshaled all of this research material, but then you too.
I had help too from Sulzer Library, from the Northeastern
History
Archives,
Museum.
Yeah, and the History Museum. So the people that helped me there,
they're all
they are in the acknowledgments. But I'd like to thank them again if they're listening out there. They're extraordinary. Was getting images, records, things like that. The library system.
Did you go in when you went in and said, "Hey"? I mean, basically, you must have gone in and said, "Hey, I'm looking for like some information." Have you ever heard of Dunning?
Yeah. The parental one when I went into Northeastern contact there said no one has ever come to look at this material.
Wow.
Before. So, you know, it was sitting there. The same, in some respects, the same history museum with the sanitarium material, but every now and then somebody would come in and look. But for the most part, no. No.
But
the Dunning stuff is actually mostly from one guy who had a website. His name escapes me. He's the one that collected all of that material. He's unfortunately passed on, but he should be given credit for correlating.
Well, you can't write a book like this without a lot of help.
Yeah. And, of course, Christina, the major help.
In a few more minutes, I'm going to read another. I also just love the writing in here. I mean, I really do. Here
and
is just
that's 100% Martin. So, as an editor, we may have helped like with some shaping and that type of editing, but the writing, the beauty of it, and the powerful nature of it, that's Martin 100%.
Here you go. Dunning is an empire of soaked wood and flies. Its currencies are cigarettes and the cracked skin of women. This is so sad. Dunning tends the flowers of romance. Miss Annie Phillips, 82, meets her first husband, William Smith, blind, lame, and well on in years, a resident of the Southside home for incurables. That's a charming name.
Yeah, the names are great.
Ooh. Yeah, you got a lot of these names in here. They're terrifying. Yeah. The two move into Dunning, and the Tribune notes, quote, groom blind, bride lame. When health and money run out, elderly couples are routinely pried apart. If one is infirm and sent to county hospital, the other will go to the poorhouse at Dunning, their own health aside. 50 years of marriage can end this way. Depending on where you are in Mother Chicago, with the police on the sidewalk to lightly encourage the vacancy. Many of the streets are still boardwalk and the slums keep rising, but there is now a train going to Dunning with tickets for anyone at no cost. And that's really beautiful writing.
Thank you.
What
Yeah, ship them out, right?
Yeah.
Go out to Dunedin.
Yeah.
I expect maybe the model here in Chicago would be like London, where the poor are all living in the suburbs like satellites, while the city is, you know, the interior is supposed to be the investment center. But it's not going to work here, I can tell them that.
No, it's not. You can buy Mother Courage at what bookstores may remain. Mother Chicago.
Mother Courage, yeah, that's Mother, a compliment. That's a good book.
Mother Chicago, Truant Dreams. How did you come up with the title? I know it's in here somewhere. I remember reading it in here. Did you guys collaborate on the title?
A little bit is the modern nature of the publishing business of subtitles. And
oh, yeah.
We're a, you know, beholden to metadata, as they call it. So we were trying to have a subtitle that wasn't... that conveyed the idea and still like respected Martin's work.
There's a bit of mystery in it. So yeah,
well, a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people. If you go on Amazon, I guess this is Amazon. There is some remarkable, as Martin truthfully told me. He goes, yeah, some of these are my friends, but I've never heard of some of these people.
Yeah, it's very flattering.
And some of these people. This book is a journey into the dirty underbelly of the city of my birth. An unusual side the average public doesn't register in their hurried lives. Martin's dive into the side of Chicago, its unseen side, and his unique writing style telling the story of Chicago casts off was so enjoyable, I'm going to read it again. I could not use the word enjoyable for this. For me, it was revelatory. It was incredibly informative, and I was looking at parts of a city that I thought I knew pretty well. And I was looking at the end of this, when I finished this book, at Chicago in a new way. You have added a new perspective for people to look at the city of their birth and the city that I indeed love, though I certainly worry about.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Wonderfully written by an original new voice and engrossing from first to last page. Highly recommended. I could have written that. You must be, Christina Ward, proud to have published this.
We are eminently proud of this book. It is a great joy as a publisher when you're publishing a book that you know is so different and groundbreaking. Honestly.
Groundbreaking is the word.
Right. It truly is.
Martin, you have ever been, I don't know you well. I've known you for a long time, and we have some wonderful mutual friends. I don't know. I've always found you to be self-effacing. I may be totally wrong. You may be a nightmare when you're not with me. But I've got to think you are terribly proud of what you've created here.
Yeah, absolutely. 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 There's nothing else to... Yeah.
And it...
Extremely. Yeah.
Do you think it has turned you into... You do a lot of writing for a website called counterpunch.org,
yeah.
Which I started... I didn't know that, but I started to devour stuff on there after this.
Yeah, it's great.
You think this is launching... Terrible word. A career as a book writer for you.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Why not? Not?
Well, I suppose
the definition of self-effacing.
It depends on the next thing that I submit to Mrs. Ward. So
are you
to Christina?
Are you deep in researching anything now? I mean, you obviously get a great deal of joy from researching.
Yeah, I do. And again, I think it's more of an eccentric mental pastime of the city, of those of us in the city of a certain class at a certain time.
Yeah,
I think we all do it. But yeah, I am. I've got some ideas.
Good. My father once wrote a book about William Hale Thompson called Big Bill of Chicago.
Yeah, of course.
And one of the best lines in Martin's book that he did not write is a line from Big Bill. This is such a classic. I only concern myself with the big things. I can't be bothered with details.
Yeah, right? It's it's almost poetic. It really is.
No,
yeah.
And it almost sets the template for future politicians, question about it.
It's a perfect cross between a confession and a threat. So
you are so right. I could not, it's not my place, Martin, to be proud of you, but I am I'm slightly overwhelmed by this book.
Thank you
so much. I think it is a great book, and I'm glad you wrote it, and I'm sorry my father's not around to read it, because he would have appreciated it on a number of different levels, because my father, one of his best books was called Lords of the Levee, which was about Bathhouse John Coughlin and Michael Hinkey Dinkenna, which sort of set the template for all future corrupt public officials. And believe me, you're a corrupt public official. You don't really care about the people. You don't really care about the people. And this book's a great example. And Christina Ward, Farrell House is my favorite publisher.
Well, it's an honor to be on Farrell House.
It's a wonderful match here, and I hope the book does really well. And it's also hard. I mean, it's hard these days in these pinch-down kind of days to do the kind of promotion. There is a video kind of trailer of the book, which is somewhere I saw, right?
Yeah, there is. You can watch it.
Kind of scary.
On our YouTube channel, on the Farrell House YouTube channel, you can watch a short video.
It's beautifully done.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I had nothing to do with it. It was actually...
It needs the voice of Vincent Price.
if only. He's always been my idol.
Farrell House is committed to publishing stories that people normally wouldn't hear about people, by people. I mean, I'm a working class lady, and so we're always very interested in telling these stories that you're not going to find on Good Morning America or Today. Yeah. You know, I don't care what some celebrity has to say about how they decorate their couch.
Same here.
I want to hear about what Martin says about Chicago and about how...
Well, what he says in this book is this would benefit every contemporary politician or every contemporary person out there thinking, well, I'm in the business. Many of them misguided. I'm in the business. I'm going to make a better Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, read the book, and it will give you, if not a template, at least a certain knowledge that would be necessary for creating a better Chicago.
Yeah, I would hope so. And if that doesn't happen, I hope it gives them some nightmares.
It gave me nightmares. I have no money to help Chicago, so all I have is a nightmare.
Yeah.
You two, it's an ongoing pleasure to know both of you.
Thank you, sir.
Likewise.
Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you for having us, Rick.
Brett Jackson, thank you so much for manufacturing this cool show.
Absolutely.
Take care of yourselves, everybody.